Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about everyone who's asleep, everyone but us, the ones listening to the show, especially the conspiracy theorists in the UK who listen live and it's like 11 p.m. at night or something like that. You know, it's amazing how knowing that a huge bunch of ruthless criminals, sociopathic scumbaggery individuals are about to bust through your door and kill you and everything keeps you up at night. My very special guest is Topher Field from Topher's Unpopular View on American Freedom Radio. Welcome to the program, coming in as live from the most amazingly massive desert surrounded by alcoholics in the world called Australia. Welcome.
Absolutely. That is the most apt description of my home country that I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, it's a desert. What was it? Who was it that told me that? I think it was my mate Mike from the Zeitgeist Movement quite a few years back when we were trying to provide some counterbalance to the climate change mongers. We want a legally binding agreement. I was like, yes, legally bind us.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna take exception to your description on one small point. There's not enough of us on this continent to actually completely surround the desert. There's too much desert, not enough people. But we're working on it. We're gradually getting there. So, look, if you're an alcoholic, please come to Australia and help us surround this desert. That's the message here. That's what's coming out of this.
Australians also walk single file to hide their numbers.
It's true. We pack multiple of us onto the back of a single kangaroo just to make sure no one knows how many of us there really are. Look, this is quality listening. Quality listening. I'm glad I could have been a part of this. This will be remembered as the highlight of my career.
By the way, I'm sorry to all the Australians who might have taken offence. We're just having some fun. Have you got any New Zealand jokes to tell?
Not really. There's not really enough of you to tell jokes about. I've got plenty of sheep jokes, and I'm told that they apply.
But
there's a common misconception about New Zealand. Let me ask you this question. You'll know the answer. What's the capital of New Zealand?
Wellington.
Well, no, it's not. It's about $2.50, but it's going down every year as they lose taxpayers. Couldn't help myself.
Righto. Well, you know what was interesting? You know how we talk about a lot of shark attacks and things like that, and everybody's afraid of the Australian wildlife? Or
yep.
Dig this.
Yep.
Dude died yesterday, got eaten by a shark off the coast of, Murawai Beach. I don't have any idea why the hell anybody would swim in off Murawai. It's a horrible beach, horrible beach. Mm-hmm. And he gets killed. Three sharks come along, turn it into a feeding frenzy. The police show up, start shooting at the sharks and stuff like that to get them to shoo away. They're like, oh, we don't know if we killed one of them. Dude, if you kill a shark, it floats up, doesn't it? you know, it's just like police are so dumb.
They're not marine biologists. Let's at least cut them that much slack.
Yeah. Well, incidentally, the cop who was on the news actually reporting all of this was a cop who tried to arrest me and a couple of my mates from the Zeitgeist Movement one time when we were rolling down the road doing a Love Police sketch, you know, with a megaphone hanging out the van. Yeah. And I just like, isn't it funny how you see these familiar faces all the time? And it's always the really angry, psychotic cops that arrest you and antagonize you for no reason that always wind up getting the media coverage, but not for that reason.
Well, look, my personal interaction with cops has been rather more common than I would have liked. But so far, in Australia at least, I've actually found most of them to be very professional, very, very deceived. They believe they're doing the right things and they're completely wrong about their own perception of themselves. But I can't fault their sincerity. I hear horror stories, but my own personal experience hasn't yet gone that way. I get very frustrated because they are so resolute in their certainty of their own correctness. And I had a situation a few years ago where two police officers showed up on the front lawn of my property, of my parents' property, when my mum was home, and they were trying to throw mum out. They claimed they had a court order, and they were trying to throw mum out of the property, and mum locked herself in and called my dad, and he was hours away at the time, and I was about an hour away, and so I was sent to try and get there first and defuse this situation with the cops trying to throw my mum out of the family home. And so I got there an hour later. My mum had been on the phone with me a couple of times. She was in hysterics. She was crying. The police had told her that she was going to be arrested and thrown in jail if she didn't comply, and so on and so forth. And I walked on the property and said, let me see your warrant. And they said, well, we don't have one, but it's on its way. I said, well, until it gets here, get off my land. So they did. They walked off the land, and they started having a little bit of a go at me. They, you know, why are you arguing? Why are you giving us a hard time? You know there's a warrant out there. You know it's coming by. I said, well, look, you know, we'll talk about it when it gets here. We'll talk about it when I see it. Now, I knew that the warrant they claimed they had actually had no authority and had, in fact, expired. And so I stood my ground. I didn't let them walk back on the property. And then my dad had a brainwave. He was still a while away, but he called the cops on the cops. Because they weren't actually acting in response to a warrant. What they were acting in response to was a telephone call where someone had claimed that they owned our land and that we were the ones trespassing on it. It was a call from a real estate agent. And so he had this idea. He thought, hang on, this is an unlawful entry. This is actually, their activity is illegal. So he called the cops on the cops. And a senior sergeant showed up onto the scene who was more senior than the two people that I'd been dealing with. And he very quickly threw water all over the situation. And within a couple of minutes, I had a bit of an apology from the two constables who had been harassing my mum. And what's unfortunate, though, is that up until that moment, they were adamant that they were right. They would not for a moment believe that I might actually know more about what they were doing than they would. All they were responding to was an order that came down the line. They didn't know where that order came from. They didn't know the authority of the person who gave it in the first place or the basis that it was being acted upon. It was a telephone call. They didn't even have any way of identifying for certain the person who made the telephone call, let alone to know whether that person had the authority they claimed they had. But here were these two people on the front lawn of a family home, absolutely determined to throw a family out of their own home. And absolutely certain that they were right, that they were the good guys. And that's what concerns me about police officers. I don't have a massive issue with them at a personal level. I think a lot of them are actually very, very decent human beings. But they live in this world of certainty where that certainty is doing an enormous amount of harm. They don't know what they're doing.
It seems every other day we have an Australian on the show who's talking about the nasty Australian police at some point. It's very interesting. Anyway, back to the shark attack story, what I found very interesting is that it was the number one story in the news, right? And it was the first fatal shark attack since 1976. And they did like a full, 4 minutes of mainstream, number one, you know. And, you know, like the third or fourth story that they covered was, hey, New Zealand's power suppliers and everything like that are going to be sold to foreigners. Next story.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's not interesting at all. There's no need for anyone to know anything about that. Why would you put that on the front page? Cynicism, people, just in case you're wondering that that wasn't serious.
It's unbelievable.
Well, you know what's happening in England at the moment, don't you, with the power stations over there, where they're looking at shutting down, don't quote me, but I believe it was 16% of their maximum capacity is being shut down either today at the end of February or it might have been at the end of March. I wasn't expecting to be talking about this, so I haven't rebriefed myself on it. But this is all part of their green energy targets. They've built all their various windmills and all that sort of stuff. And so now, supposedly, so the theory goes, they should be able to shut some power plants down, which of course doesn't work that way because when the wind stops blowing, it stops blowing and there's not much you can do about it. I read an analysis a little while ago. Some people argue that, if you have enough wind farms over a large enough area, then there'll always be the wind blowing somewhere. And so you just have to interconnect the grid and eventually you'll get enough power out of them. And I read an analysis a while ago that the entirety of the US, if you take the outputs from all of their wind farms and you do an analysis for the European Union, right across the European Union, it regularly, the wind farm generation power plants regularly fall to 5% of their capacity or below. And that's across an area the size of Europe. They still don't have wind enough on a regular basis to generate much electricity. So the whole idea that wind farms can replace baseload power generators is just moronic. However, England, being the morons that they are, my apologies to your English viewers, I am of course from convict blood, so that's my defence. If I seem a little bit disrespectful towards the old country, it's in the blood. I can't help it. But being the morons that British politicians tend to be, they are of course just pushing ahead and closing down power plants, and I believe it might be happening today, if not in a month's time. And I believe it was 16% of their power generating capacity going offline in pursuit of a green dream.
Now, it always seems to me that there's a whole lot of really bad things that are done throughout history, which is morons carrying out the orders of assholes.
Yeah. And this comes back to the police officers earlier. I mean, they were following orders. You know, we've heard that before, unfortunately. It is no defense. I mean, you think about it. If you walk into court and you say, I was driving at 120 kilometers an hour down the highway, sir, because I was following orders – they would say, well, no, that's no excuse. Or if you say, oh, excuse me, I was ignorant of the law, I didn't know, they'll say, well, ignorance is no excuse before the law. We have no excuse. If our boss tells us to break the law and we go ahead and do it, it's no excuse for us. And yet,
can I define this? We have no excuse and they have no accountability. That's how the dynamic works.
That's exactly how it works. Because when they turn around and discover that they've broken the law, i.e. that they were trespassing on my parents' land, they, of course, just go, oh, well, really sorry about that. We'll move on.
Yeah. Hey, dig this, bro. We've got the census form like in my living room right now. I don't want to fill it out. You know, but what happens if I don't fill it out? A $500 fine plus a $20 fine for every day that I don't have it filled out. Okay.
Seriously.
And they're saying, oh, you don't have to worry about whether or not the government will use this for nefarious purposes or anything like that. It's like, motherfucker, do you know what happened? You know,
have you not read the history books?
Yeah, but there was this woman, what's her name? She's the Minister for Social Development, a rather corpulent Paula Bennett. And I think it was a while back, a couple of months ago, maybe even last year or whatever, she released the income details of a beneficiary, like told everybody how much money she was getting from her benefit because that beneficiary questioned the ethics of the Minister of Social Development. Okay. Now, that was illegal. That was secret information. Just that's not allowed to be that's not allowed to be put out. But guess what happens to Paula Bennett? Nothing.
Well, nothing, of course. No, well,
she's still the Minister of Social Development.
Yeah, she's part of the government. The rules don't apply. That, by the way, for the sake of our listeners, that's one of the easiest litmus tests to understand whether or not you're faced with any kind of tyranny. People often, when you say, oh, look, our government is turning into a tyranny, a lot of people laugh at you and go, that's ridiculous. They're not marching down the streets in jackboots or throwing people into concentration camps and gassing them. You know, you're being ridiculous. We're not under tyranny. No, the simple test of tyranny is this. Is there one rule for the government and a different rule for the people? One rule for the rulers and a different rule for the ruled. If the rules are different, you are under a tyranny. You are under a form of government that is over you, not serving you. It's as simple as that. The test is very, very easy, and I'm afraid every single Western government in the world today fails that test.
Every single one of them. You know, it doesn't matter. And I had a discussion last night with Shuri Kane, Len Horowitz, and a guy named Nigel about the Israel-Palestine conflict. And what was very interesting is that they actually enlightened me as to the scumbaggery that the Palestinians are also committing. And what occurred to me is it's like, you know what? Both sides of every major argument are usually wrong, because the only reason why there's an argument or a conflict going on is because the people who are ruling over the majority of people on both sides of the frickin' argument are scumbag liars.
Yeah. It is very interesting to me when I see various movements over there that are happening at a real grassroots level, where there are Israelis and Palestinians and conservative traditional Jews and Muslims and so forth getting together saying, hey, we actually don't want to be killing each other. And we've seen a few different online campaigns where people have taken photographs and sent them around and that sort of thing. And at a grassroots level, I don't think there's an enormous amount of animosity there. And occasionally in the mainstream media, you'll get a little bit of an insight into that when they do actually go in and they interview people. It's very much at an organizational level and at a national level in the case of the Israelis and at a cultural level in the case of the Palestinians, where they are being brought up with this culture of death to Israel. Now, there's a very, very simple test that I like to do when it comes to, I like to keep things simple. So just like my litmus test for tyranny, I like to keep a nice simple test when I'm trying to figure out the good guy and the bad guy in any given conflict. If such a thing is possible to be figured out, I like to go, okay, who needs to stop shooting in order for the shooting to stop? Simple question. The implications are very significant, though. Let's apply this to a really simple test here. Hitler is expanding and invading his way right through Europe. Let's ignore how and why the war exactly started. There's arguments about who declared war on whom and all the rest of it. Let's ignore that. Let's fast forward into the middle of the war, and Hitler is invading multiple countries and pushing his way across Europe. If the Allies turn around and go, you know what, we're going to stop shooting. No more shooting from us. We're just going to stop. Would that have stopped the shooting?
No.
No, it wouldn't. Because the war would have continued. The invasions would have continued. If Hitler had turned around and said, right, armies, stop shooting. War's over. Let's all go home. Would that have stopped the shooting? Yes, it would. Because the Allies simply wanted the war to stop. Now, they wanted the borders to go back to where they were pre-war. There was, you know, there's always more to it than the simplest of tests. But at a simple level, we can see very quickly and very easily that the war was being perpetuated by the continued aggression of the Germans in that particular case. Let's apply that test now to the Israel-Palestine situation. Let's have a look who needs to stop shooting in order for the shooting to stop. Well, on multiple occasions, the Israelis have stopped shooting. There's been multiple ceasefires which they have honored. And unfortunately, there have been elements within, and I'm not saying that this represents necessarily the entire Palestinian population, but there are organizations and elements within the Palestinian areas that continue shooting. They continue firing rockets, they break the ceasefires, and the death perpetuates. The only way that that particular conflict is ever going to defuse is if we have a situation where those elements within the Palestinian occupied areas actually stop firing, unfortunately. Yeah. And we see
what's happening with this situation is it's like there's two groups of extremists. There's Palestinian extremists and there's Israeli extremists. And both of them are a very, very small minority. And, the situation is thus that you can't actually solve the conflict unless people stop resorting to extremism of any kind.
Well, in particular, stop resorting to killing each other's children. I mean, that pretty much. I'm sure you heard the quote from Barack Obama. No civilized country would tolerate missiles raining down upon its citizens or something of that effect. Now, he was talking about Palestine firing rockets into Israel, but you think about his own drone attacks. What's he doing to other countries?
See, and again, there's this double standard that everybody's got everywhere. You know, the Israelis are bad, or the Palestinians are bad, or the Americans are bad, or whatever. Don't you realize, ladies and gentlemen, killing people is bad?
Yeah.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Topher Field in just a few minutes. Welcome back, everybody, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're rocking out here with Topher Field for 2 hours today. And we were just commenting over the break. I just love having Topher on, man. We just sit back and have a few laughs, you know. Good fun.
Can I say, before we go any further, that's the kind of music that would get me thrown in jail over here. Now, that may sound a little bit strange, so let me explain. That's the kind of music that I would play through my headphones while I'm riding my motorbike. And I would get so amped up listening to that kind of music that I would do things on the motorbike that would get me thrown in jail. I'm going to have to get the name of that band off you and see if I can track down their stuff.
Oh, that's Muse. That's a song called Knights of Sidonia.
I know Muse. I hadn't come across that particular song. Weird.
Well, when I first saw the music video for this, it's so ridiculously awesome. Like, it's the most awesome music video you could ever conceive of in your life. Nice. You know, like, I mean, look, let me just put it like this. Cowboys with laser guns.
We're not talking cowboys and aliens style here, are we? I mean, let's be honest, that wasn't a great movie.
No, we ain't talking cowboys and aliens. It was just cowboys with laser guns. It was way better.
Well, look, I'll give that a chance. I'll give that a go. It sounds a little bit interesting.
Mm-hmm. And I think, I was just pulling up a search term for knights, and the second term that comes up is Knights of Sidonia by Muse here. So here you go. Here's here's the link, so you can probably watch that at your leisure. Right. The census. I am really concerned about this in New Zealand here because the Libertarian Party allegedly, and I should get one of them on the show. I don't know. You know what the really annoying thing is about libertarians? Because they don't give out any information. You can't freaking find one when you need one. They're calling to boycott the census and what have you. And I'm just thinking, man, the libertarian coffers in this country are probably broke enough as it is, and they're going to be busy paying all these fines and everything too.
You know what's interesting? Did I tell you last time I came on that that I refused to vote at one of our elections one time? Did I tell you about what happened there? No, well, over in Australia, we have mandatory voting. It's supposed to be one of the cornerstones of our particular version of democracy. And so whether or not you want to, you have to get out and have your name ticked off the rolls. Otherwise, they fine you. So we had a local by-election here, and I had a look at all my different options. I read through the pamphlet and saw who was on offer. And I kind of went through and went, yep, okay, communist, statist, socialist, communist, statist. I went through the whole list and just saw nothing but people I didn't want to vote for. So I thought, well, my understanding of my constitutional rights are that I have the right, in the explicit language of the Constitution, to vote as I see fit. Now, voting as I see fit must include not voting for someone I don't want to vote for. Now, another thing you need to know about the system over here is that, unlike the American system, we don't have the ability to write in a name. We can't write in the person we want to vote for. We must choose from one of the options that are put in front of us. So we have to vote, and we have to choose from one of the people that are on the ticket. And I looked at all those people and said, well, in good conscience, I can't vote for any of them. So I didn't show up. I didn't vote. And I got a letter in the mail a little while later saying that I owed the local council $55 for failing to vote in their little by-election. So I wrote them a very polite letter, quoted from the Constitution, my right to vote as I see fit, used a high court precedent that protects citizens from being required to engage in a farce, because their response would have been, oh, but you should have shown up, had your name crossed off the list, and then just done voted informal, or, you know, crossed them all out or something, done a protest vote of some sort, but you should have shown up. And that, of course, would be the definition of a farce. The definition of a farce is to participate in the form of something without actually having any influence on the reality of it. And so that would be a farce, to require me to show up and pretend to vote without having any impact on the actual vote itself. So I sent them off this letter and kind of I laid out my case that I could vote as I saw fit, and that must include withholding my vote, and that they couldn't require me to show up and not vote, which is what they would have come back with. Never heard from them again. They must have just read the letter and gone, yeah, too hard. Can't be bothered. Don't want to have to argue with this particular guy. So I don't know if something like that, you could perhaps claim privacy, or whether there's anything in your constitution or in legal precedent that would allow you not to have to disclose information. I know
that's
for example,
the difficulty because that's not my area. I don't do research. I just kind of interview researchers and stuff like that. I mean, if there's anybody listening to this particular broadcast who knows of some particular part of the statutes or anything, because you know what it's like reading legal documents and statutes and things like that, Topher. It's just waffle and crap.
Yeah,
jeez, creepers. Learn how to speak frickin' English.
Well, I do know that you have, because you're a part of the Commonwealth and your legal system has come out of English common law, you have the right to not disclose information that will expose you to a forfeiture, to a fine, to a penalty, to criminal charges. It's in a way, it's similar to pleading the Fifth in the US Bill of Rights. Obviously, the legal side of it is different, but the principle is similar, where you can't be required to divulge information that could expose you to a penalty. Now, of course, you're the only one who's really in a position to judge what information might or might not expose you to a penalty. So you might be able to argue that you're not filling out the census on the basis that the information that you provide therein may be used to charge you money, to assess your taxes, to decide various things like that.
Ironically, if I don't fill out the census, I do get a penalty imposed on me.
They've screwed you five ways to Sunday, hey? They've got you no matter what you do.
See, that's what these scumbags do, man. Yeah, I mean, no wonder people get angry. No wonder people, you know, just think, you know, if only I had an AK-47 and a rooftop.
Well, I can't say that I've ever thought that, but I know that some people do. But look, here's the thing. At some point, if we don't say enough and start to push back, and when I say push back, I mean at least in the first instance, push back in legal and political terms. I'm a great fan of the fact that Western democratic systems have relatively very little violence involved in their political systems, and frankly, I would like to keep it that way. So I don't want to see people resorting to violent means or intimidation or threats or any of that sort of stuff. So at least in the first instance, we need to actually organize ourselves and push back in a political and in a legal way. Because if we don't push back, this isn't going to stop. One of the things that really drives me, there is no bureaucrat on the planet who will ever look at the range of laws that have been written and the regulations that they've got and say, you know what, I think that's enough. I think we've written enough regulations for one lifetime. I don't think we need to write any more. That is never going to happen. In their world and in their life, more regulations are always the answer. So if we're unhappy with the amount of regulations we've already got, we're the ones who are going to have to put a stop to it. Because the bureaucrats and the politicians who are writing these regulations and creating these departments, they are never going to stop themselves. We're the ones who have to find a way, preferably non-violent, and I really stress that. It breaks my heart when I see people who waste their own life and throw away the lives of other people in some kind of a futile, bit of stupidity. But we need to organise and we need to find ways of resistance. And there's a number of ways that can be done. I mean, we've got a group here in Australia called the Australian Taxpayers Alliance, who are organising, and the more support they get, the more influence they'll start to get. And they're representing taxpayers on taxpayer related issues. And they hold a relatively speaking, fairly libertarian worldview and a fairly libertarian view of what governments should and should not do. Now, every Australian who is frustrated by what governments are doing over here should be on their mailing list at a minimum, if not donating to them. Support these guys, because these are the kinds of organizations that can actually provide us with a platform for non-violent resistance, for a non-violent pushback of some sort. There are a lot of different organizations that can be joined. There are a lot of things that can be done, even at an individual level. Educating yourself on how you can refuse to pay fines. I refused to pay a fine for not voting. Now, that's something that I learned because I have, over a period of years, have spent time reading the Constitution, reading people's analysis of the Constitution, reading the testimonies of people who have, in their own ways, done their own little pushback, who talk on radio or get online and so forth. And this is an individual responsibility. One of the comments you made earlier, which I think is very true and very funny, libertarians are often quite hard to track down because they don't tend to be putting their information all over the place. And one of the things that always amuses me is when someone comes along and says, I'm a real libertarian, I believe in individualism, blah, 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 blah. You know what? You, talking to me, should get into politics. You should start you should lead this organization, or you should do whatever. I'm like, if you're a real libertarian, wouldn't you be looking for what you can do rather than trying to tell me that I should start some organization that you can join? Isn't that the very antithesis of the libertarian sort of mentality? So I really encourage people, find a way that you can do something. Find a way that you can actually push back in some nonviolent way without feeling the need to be led by someone else. Because if each of us organizes our own little thing, we're going to be unstoppable.
Yeah, and there was just something that you just reminded me of now is, what was it? Oh, yeah. If you're having a look at who to vote for and you don't see anybody you vote, then you just wish, I wish I was in the race. That way I could at least vote for myself because I know I'm not going to screw me over.
Yeah. Very, very true. I have run in one state and one federal election a number of years ago for a very, very minor party that had absolutely no chance of actually winning a seat. I was basically helping to fill the ballot and knew that I wasn't going to be elected. And that experience has really that was actually one of the things that turned me from being what would probably be termed a conservative and began the real rapid transfer for me into libertarianism. When I got a bit of a closer look at all of the other candidates, and I got a bit of a closer look at what was expected and required of me, even within this fairly conservative minor party, what their attitudes towards government were, and I began to realize, getting the right people in government is not the answer. It's getting government out of our lives that's the answer. It actually shouldn't really matter all that much who's in government, because their hands should be so strictly hogtied and they should be so limited in what they can do, and they should be so actively resisted by the population anytime they try and step outside of their boundaries that it really shouldn't matter. They shouldn't be able to screw us over. It's our own apathy that's the reason we get screwed over. It's the fact that we aren't individually and as in small groups and so forth standing up and going, no, we're drawing a line here, you can't go any further. We're actually the ones to blame.
See, and this is why I think if we actually did want to be elected, we should run for the apathy party. We'd win by a landslide.
A mate of mine actually started a Facebook group called the Apathy Party, and I could barely muster up the energy to join. So it was one of those interesting parties where if someone actually has the energy to go and sign on, then they don't really belong in the Apathy Party. It's all the people who don't sign up that obviously belong.
Maybe they should belong to the Irony Party.
Apathy and irony. Let's roll them into one.
Yeah. Like we'll form a coalition.
Yeah. The new coalition of apathy and irony parties, and as the irony party that allows you to join the apathy party because that's ironic.
Yeah, exactly. Like you have to join both parties because in order to join the apathy party, it has to be ironic. Okay. I get the dynamic.
Moving on.
Yes.
How do we get ourselves into these corners? I don't know. Anyway.
I don't know. I was explaining yesterday my theory of fractal scumbaggery. Have you heard of the fractal universe theory?
I know the fractal universe theory. I have no idea how it relates to scumbaggery, but I'm interested.
Well, fractal universe, obviously, you know, you look into one part of the universe and it starts to replicate and look exactly the same as other parts of the universe. You look into those, so on and so forth. Fractal scumbaggery is when you look into one instance of scumbaggery and you start to see that there's other instances of scumbaggery, and you look into those other instances and there's even more scumbaggery. Infinite scumbaggery up and down.
You know, the reason why I'm laughing is because that is exactly what I observed and what I came across when I started looking into the water crisis here in Australia. I think I mentioned that to you last time we talked. That's what first got me started, was the water crisis over here. And we had a very severe drought and the government was severely restricting water usage and so forth. And I began to get frustrated. I felt that they weren't doing what they should have been doing. And that was what began. That was the very first thing that got me off my lazy, apathetic backside and got me to start looking into government and looking into what they were doing. And so I began looking into – they were building a desalination plant at a cost of billions of dollars because they said that the rain wasn't going to fall anymore because we had global warming, and our now climate commissioner Tim Flannery told us that the dams were never going to fill again. So I began looking into that and began to discover that there were all sorts of alternatives, other things that we could have done that would have provided more water for less money. And then people began to call me up after I released that video and tell me about other aspects of the water issue and blah, blah, blah. And like you say, I began to see scumbaggery within scumbaggery. Well, I released three different videos, and then eventually I had to release a fourth, which I called Liars, Damn Liars, and Politicians. And that was basically about the scumbaggery. Because over the course of making the three previous videos, one about the desalination plant, one about a ridiculous pipeline that should never have been built, and a third one about a very brilliant pipeline that should be built, but of course isn't being built, by the time I'd researched those three different aspects of the water issue, I had such a backlog of scumbaggery that needed to be revealed, that needed to be put in people's faces. Now, here's a funny story, and this is an interesting little story that I think illustrates the power of the individual. I released that video a couple of months before the state election down here. And, I released that video a couple of months before the state election down here. Now, at the time we had a Labor government in power, which in this country is actually our more liberal brand of government. It's the ones who are more pro-union and pro-big government and pro-welfare programs. And we... I released that video protesting and revealing some of the lies and deception of that government. And I probably better finish the story after the ad break.
If we can remember it. We'll be right back.
I'll do my best.
Yeah. We'll be right back. Topher Field from Australia, ladies and gentlemen. You can also catch his show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Back in a minute.
Did you have to interrupt the music?
You know, I didn't have to, but I did anyway.
Oh, man. Yeah, is it pure narcissism that people like you and I like the sound of our own voices and get on the radio? Is it just pure selfishness?
There's definitely a little bit of that, but yeah. If there's an old truth who's gone, he's not with us now anymore. Mm. But he was talking about the parable of the cosmic schmuck, and he says, if you think and question, am I a cosmic schmuck? Then you are far less likely to turn into or continue to be a cosmic schmuck. But if you never question whether or not you are being a cosmic schmuck, you're definitely are one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so if you question whether or not you're narcissistic, hey, you might well be, but the mere fact that you're questioning is lessening its impact and getting rid of it.
I like it. I like it. At least if I think like that, it justifies my narcissism. I can now live comfortably with my narcissism, comfortable in the knowledge that I'm aware of my narcissism. That's nice. I like that. If I can just get back to what I was talking about just before the break, and I'll try and get through this story quickly because it's one of those ones where I can get a bit bogged down in the details. But let me introduce the players. We had a Labor government at the time, who were doing anything they possibly could to not fix the water crisis. They were building a very expensive desalination plant that was far more expensive than it needed to be and would provide far less water than some much cheaper solutions. They realized that the desalination plant would not be finished before the coming election. So what they did was they commissioned what was called the North-South Pipeline that was designed to connect irrigation districts in the north of Victoria with the suburban districts in the south of Victoria so that we could basically take away farmers' water and flush it down our toilets. The reason why they thought this was a good idea was pure politics. The pipeline could be finished before the election. Therefore, before the election, they'd be able to ease water restrictions and hopefully make people a little bit happier. It was really cynical, pure politics. Now, a woman by the name of Jan Beer started a protest group called Plug the Pipe, trying to stop the government from building this North-South pipeline, trying to show people that it was such a ridiculous idea, and it simply made no sense at any level. She got in touch with me. She gave me the details of it. I went and did my own research. I agreed with her, and so I released a video on the North-South pipeline. It was the second video that I ever did and became quite popular, all the rest of it. Anyway, fast forward a couple of months after I released that video, and I released what was my fourth video called Liars, Damn Liars and Politicians. Now, this was specifically taking aim at our, at the time, Premier and our Water Minister, who I named by name in that video. It was a name and shame video, and I brought out 10 lies that they had told regarding water. Very, very brutal, very, very honest, and very, very dangerous in this country where you can be sued for defamation even if what you've said was true. Now, they never saw fit to take me to court, fair enough, but in this country, it's always a risk, even if what you're saying is the truth. Come the election, a few months after the release of that video, the Labor Party had a surprise loss. They were expecting to regain government. They were expecting to continue in power. They lost by one seat. The one seat that they lost was the seat in which they were building that pipeline. They lost because Jan Beer, the person who started that protest group, ran for government in that seat. She only got about 12% of the votes, but she directed her preferences to the other party, to the other guys, away from the government party. And that's what cost them the seat. One person running a grassroots protest group with no money whatsoever, assisted by people like myself making videos, other grassroots people doing things at their own expense, brought down the government in a shock election loss. Brought them down over the fact that they had completely disregarded the law and completely disregarded the will of the people in the way they were handling the water crisis. So it's possible. It can be done. Now, unfortunately, the reality of our situation is that the Liberal government, which is actually confusingly our more conservative brand of politician over here, comes into power, and frankly, they're not much better. There isn't a lot of difference between our political parties over here, and I think that's a case that's true of most Western democracies at the moment.
Like you've got a choice between a left-wing fascist or a right-wing communist.
I go the other way. Fascist and communist are two very similar brands of a very similar thing, just wrapped in different packaging. It's like one's in Christmas packaging, one's in birthday packaging. That's kind of, but the present underneath is kind of exactly the same thing. In this country, I think we have a communist party known as the Greens. I think we have a hardline socialist party known as Labour. We have a soft socialist party known as the Liberals. And we have a national socialist party known as the Nationals. What we don't have is a party that isn't socialist. That's what we don't have in this country. And I think that the same thing is true of the UK. The same thing is true of the Republicans and Democrats in the US. I don't know much about the New Zealand political system, to be honest, but I suspect
they do exist. They do exist, but only in theory. Like, none of the actual, you know, non-socialist parties have ever been elected.
Yeah, and they never have enough of a – they never have much of an impact on the actual national discourse, unfortunately. So the sour note at the end of that story, the good news is she brought down the government. The bad news is it was replaced with someone who – and a form of government that really isn't that much better. And that's what we need to work on, is cornering our politicians and putting them in a position where they can't afford to continue pursuing these failed socialist policies that have gotten us into an awful mess. And the mess we're in is going to get a whole lot worse before it ever gets better. We've got to put these guys under so much political pressure that someone has to come along and go, hey, I've got this radical new idea. Let's actually make the government smaller. Let's actually, you know, reduce welfare. Let's actually start to go the other way, because going in the direction that we've been going in for the last 40 years is failing miserably. So unfortunately, there is a little bit of a sour note at the end of that story. But the good news is it is possible for grassroots individuals, grassroots movements, to be able to directly impact and affect the outcome of elections, to be able to directly affect the political process.
The proviso being is that once they have had one success, don't just go back to sleep. You actually have to keep pushing.
Yeah. And unfortunately, the Plug the Pipe group did exactly that. They went straight back to sleep. The reason being, and this is an important thing to note, they were a one-issue party. All they were concerned about was that pipeline. And once they brought to power a government that said, hey, we're not going to use that pipeline, we're not going to take water away from our irrigation districts, they said, okay, job done, all good, we can go to sleep now. What they hadn't done is actually woken up to the point where they realized that government was the problem in, you know, the broader aspects of life, not just within this pipeline issue. So that's where people like you and I hopefully come in, to light a bit of a fire under some people's backsides and actually get them started and get them awake to the point where they can't just go back to sleep.
Yeah, the old quote, I think it might have been Jefferson, you know, the price of freedom is eternal vigilance, you know, emphasis on the eternal, emphasis on the vigilance, okay? You know, you've got to be constantly fighting these scumbags. You've got to be telling your government, not asking them, but telling them what you want every single day, and do not take frickin' no for an answer. If they do, if they say no, then you go, okay, well, I'm going to have to run against you. I'm going to have to do this. I'm going to have to take you to court. I'm going to do, and it's basically like when you've got a child who is being unruly, you do not say, oh, okay, well, I'll just let you get your way, because then you wind up with a brat who controls your frickin' household.
Yeah. To quote the US government, we do not negotiate with terrorists. And I would like to add to that, even if the terrorists are in Canberra or in Wellington or wherever it may be for your particular country, I don't care where the terrorists are, I don't negotiate with them.
People don't realize that terrorism in the dictionary is a system of government, whereby the system of government where you intimidate and coerce people into doing what you want, making them afraid.
Yeah. There's a video that I really want to make, and it'd be done in the form of a short film. Oh, by the way, I don't know if I've told you, I had a short film make the finals of Tropfest here in Australia.
Congratulations.
Tropfest being the largest film festival, short film festival in the world, and 16 films out of the hundreds that are entered get picked for the finals, and one of mine was picked. And if you look up The Hustle, H-U-S-T-L-E, and The Hustle Tropfest, it should take you to the SBS page where you can actually watch that. To do a Google search for The Hustle Tropfest, and you can have a look at my most recent short film. But I'd love to make another short film, and it would be a gangster film. Set in kind of, you know, 1930s Chicago kind of stuff, where you've got the standover men walking into people's shops, you know, demanding protection money. You know, we don't want any trouble around here. You know, if you pay us this money, we'll make sure that nothing bad happens to you. Kind of thing. The standard, you know, mafia standover tactics. And develop the script and develop the story, and along it goes. And then right at the end of the story, your nasty, mean-looking Chicago. Chicago gangsters turn into tax collectors and bureaucrats, and we suddenly realize that the whole story hasn't been about organized crime. It's actually been about government. Because, you know, think about
what's interesting, Tofu, you saying that because you know how they say great minds think alike. The other day, I was talking with my bandmate Mikhail, and he was thinking you got writer's block of a short film, and we were talking about the census, and I said, well, what if the census worker was a gang member, and he was coming over, and he had gang patches on and everything like that, and he was intimidating you and trying to get you fill out the census and things like that, and then you call the police, and then a few more gang members come over, and they're the police, and that kind of thing, and the whole mentality is that the government is the gang.
Well, that's essentially where we're at now. The things that government do, they say, right, you've earned money, congratulations, you now owe us money. That's classic protection money tactics. Oh, we see you have a business, looks like it's profitable, wouldn't want anything bad to happen.
Now, that's, with one difference, if you pay a gang protection money, you actually get protection.
there is a bit of a difference there. That's true. You've got me on that one. But it's just amazing to me that if someone comes to us with a government badge or a government title, we allow them to do things that we would never accept from someone else. You know, if a McDonald's employee, no matter how high ranking they were, walked in, knocked on your door and demanded money from you, you'd say no. But we say yes to our government. Why?
Why, indeed. We'll be right back after the break with Topher Field.